Penguin Random House Audio presents How to Stop Time by Matt Haig, read for you by Mark Meadows.
I often think of what Hendrich said to me over a century ago in his New York apartment. "The first rule is that you don't fall in love," he said. "There are other rules, too, but that is the main one. No falling in love. No staying in love, no daydreaming of love. If you stick to this, you will just about be okay." I stared through the curving smoke of his cigar out over Central Park, where trees lay uprooted from the hurricane. "I doubt I will ever love again," I said. Hendrich smiled like the devil he could be. "Good. You are, of course, allowed to love food and music and champagne and rare sunny afternoons in October. You can love the sight of waterfalls and the smell of old books, but the love of people is off limits. Do you hear me? Don't attach yourself to people, and try to feel as little as you possibly can for those you do meet, because otherwise you will slowly lose your mind."
Part 1. Life Among the Mayflies. I am old. That is the first thing to tell you, the thing you are least likely to believe. If you saw me, you would probably think I was about 40, but you would be very wrong. I am old. Old in the way that a tree, or a quahog clam, or a Renaissance painting is old. To give you an idea, I was born well over 400 years ago, on the 3rd of March, 1581, in my parents' room, on the third floor of a small French chateau that used to be my home. It was a warm day, apparently, for the time of year, and my mother had asked her nurse to open all the windows. "God smiled on you," my mother said. Though I think she might have added that, should he exist, the smile had been a frown ever since. My mother died a very long time ago. I, on the other hand, did not. You see, I have a condition. I thought of it as an illness for quite a while, but illness isn't really the right word. Illness suggests sickness and wasting away. Better to say I have a condition, a rare one, but not unique. One that no one knows about until they have it. It is not in any official medical journals, nor does it go by an official name. The first respected doctor to give it one back in the 1890s called it anageria with a soft G. But for reasons that will become clear, that never became public knowledge. The condition develops around puberty. What happens after that is, well, not much. Initially, the sufferer of the condition won't notice they have it. After all, every day people wake up and see the same face they saw in the mirror yesterday. Day by day, week by week, even month by month, people don't change in very perceptible ways. But as time goes by, at birthdays or other annual markers, people begin to notice you aren't getting any older. The truth is, though, that the individual hasn't stopped aging. They age exactly the same way, just much slower. The speed of aging among those with anageria fluctuates a little, but generally it is a 1-15 ratio. Sometimes it is a year every 13 or 14 years, but with me it is closer to 15. So we are not immortal. Our minds and bodies aren't in stasis. It's just that, according to the latest ever-changing science, various aspects of our aging process, the molecular degeneration, the cross-linking between cells in a tissue, the cellular and molecular mutations, including most significantly to the nuclear DNA, happen on another time frame. My hair will go grey. I may go bald. Osteoarthritis and hearing loss are probable. My eyes are just as likely to suffer with age-related presbyopia. I will eventually lose muscle mass and mobility. A quirk of anageria is that it does tend to give you a heightened immune system, protecting you from many, not all, viral and bacterial infections. but ultimately even this begins to fade. Not to bore you with the science, but it seems our bone marrow produces more hematopoietic stem cells, the ones that lead to white blood cells, during our peak years, though it is important to note that this doesn't protect us from injury or malnutrition, and it doesn't last. So, don't think of me as a sexy vampire stuck forever at peak virility, though I have to say it can feel like you are stuck forever when, according to your appearance, only a decade passes between the death of Napoleon and the first man on the moon. One of the reasons people don't know about us is that most people aren't prepared to believe it. Human beings, as a rule, simply don't accept things that don't fit their worldview. So you could say, I am 439 years old, easily enough, but the response would generally be, are you mad? Another reason people don't know about us is that we're protected by a kind of organization. Anyone who does discover our secret and believes it tends to find their short lives a cut even shorter. So the danger isn't just from ordinary humans, it's also from within. Sri Lanka, 3 weeks ago. Chandrika Senevaratne was lying under a tree in the shade, 100 meters or so behind the temple. Ants crawled over her wrinkled face. Her eyes were closed. I heard a rustling in the leaves above and looked up to see a monkey staring down at me with judging eyes. I had asked the tuk-tuk driver to take me monkey spotting at the temple. He'd told me this red-brown type with the near-bald face was a Rilawa monkey.
Very endangered, the driver had said. There aren't many left. This is their place.
The monkey darted away, disappeared among leaves. I felt the woman's hand. It was cold. I imagined she had been lying here, unfound, for about a day. I kept hold of her hand and found myself weeping. The emotions were hard to pin down, a rising wave of regret, relief, sorrow, and fear. I was sad that Chandrika wasn't here to answer my questions, but I was also relieved I didn't have to kill her. I knew she'd have had to die. This relief became something else. It might have been the stress, or the sun, or it might have been the egg hoppers I'd had for breakfast, but I was now vomiting. It was in that moment that it became clear to me. I can't do this anymore. There was no phone reception at the temple, so I waited till I was back in my hotel room in the old fort town of Gaul, tucked inside my mosquito net, sticky with heat, staring up at the pointlessly slow ceiling fan before I phoned Hendrich.
You did what you were supposed to do? He said.
Yes, I said, which was halfway to being true. After all, the outcome had been the one he'd asked for. She is dead. Then I asked what I always asked. Have you found her?
No, he said, as always. We haven't. Not yet.
Yet. That word could trap you for decades. But this time I had a new confidence. Now, Hendrich, please. I want an ordinary life. I don't want to do this. He sighed wearily.
I need to see you. It's been too long.
Los Angeles, 2 weeks ago. Hendrich was back in Los Angeles. He hadn't lived there since the 1920s, so he assumed it was pretty safe to do so, and that no one was alive who would remember him from before. He had a large house in Brentwood that served as the headquarters for the Albatross Society. Brentwood was perfect for him. A geranium-scented land of large houses, tucked behind high fences and walls and hedges, where the streets were free from pedestrians and everything, even the trees, looked perfect to the point of sterile. I was quite shocked on seeing Hendrich, sitting beside his large pool on a sun lounger, laptop on knee. Normally, Hendrich looked pretty much the same, but I couldn't help notice the change. He looked younger. Still old and arthritic, but, well, better than he'd done in a century. Hi, Hendrich, I said. You look good.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?